Let me start this talk by recalling a very basic fact in quantum field theory, which is basically pretty much of no interest to particle theorists, but for us interested you know, in phenomena at the interface of quantum theory and gravity, it is pretty much crucial. And this fact is the fact is that, you know, in quantum field theory, the notion of vacuum, of the state devoid of excitations of particles, has no universal meaning. So it's essentially observer dependent. And so this fact was started really to be appreciated in the 70s of last century. And to put it in the words of Paul Davis, in this essay that he wrote for Bryce DeWitt's 60th birthday, you know, there was a conference in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, where I took my PhD. It was in the early 80s. Probably, I think Lee was there. I read from the proceedings. And he says, essentially, before the 70s, nobody really thought about for whom the quantum field theory vacuum state appears devoid of stuff. Okay, so this fact, the fact that the vacuum state in quantum field theory is observer dependent, has actually rather dramatic consequences, you know, when we look at quantum fields in non-trivial backgrounds. And indeed, it is directly related to what I would say is one of the most important insights that semiclassical gravity provides on quantum gravity. And so the story is pretty much well known, I guess, for people in the audience. And the story starts essentially in 1973, when Jacob Bekenstein published this paper on PhysDriveD, essentially containing the results from his PhD thesis, work carried under the supervision of John Wheeler. And in his work, he basically suggested that one should look at black holes in some way as thermodynamic objects. So he conjectured, using some Gedanken experiments, that we should be able to associate an entropy to black holes proportional to their area divided by the Planck length squared. So, and this idea that black holes are thermodynamic objects was actually spectacularly confirmed by Hawking the following year, when he showed that essentially static observers far away from the black hole horizon actually detect thermal radiation, at a temperature given by a temperature proportional to the inverse of the black hole mass. And this phenomenon is fundamentally related to this notion of ambiguity of vacuum state. And this is, it is indeed the direct consequence that the art of Hawking vacuum for the field, so the vacuum that we naturally associate to free-falling observers, is perceived by the static observers as a thermal state. Well, these discoveries led to a series of very interesting questions. And, you know, to date, we still have like two very big open questions concerning the very nature of the thermodynamic nature of black holes. And the first issue concerns the nature of the degrees of freedom that is Bekenstein-Hawking entropy is counting, okay? So are these some sort of quantum microscopic degrees of freedom, or is this entropy somewhat related to the entanglement entropy of the quantum field across the horizon? Or is this entropy purely thermodynamic entropy associated with the field living in the black hole geometry? We don't know yet. We don't have a precise answer to this. And the other famous or infamous question, which remains unanswered, is the one concerning the fate of unitary evolution in a black hole background, nowadays known as the unitarity crisis. Namely, do black holes evolve pure states into mixed states? So you see this this fact that the vacuum states are an ambiguous notion in quantum field theory is thus directly linked to two of the main questions that we have, that they were facing today in the quantum gravity community. So let us start looking a little deeper at this ambiguity. So essentially, this vacuum state ambiguity is basically boils down to the fact that in a given space-time, even in Minkowski space-time, we can have different possible choices of time-like quick killing vectors, which we use to evolve our system in time, okay? So this, let's see. Why is this choice of time-like killing vectors related to this vacuum state ambiguity? Because you need this this notion or time evolution in order to decompose the space of solutions of the classical field equations into positive and negative energy subspaces, which then you use, once you have built the splitting into positive and negative energy subspaces of your space of solutions, then you use these subspaces to build your one particle Hilbert space, once you have defined appropriate inner product, which is positive definite on the one particle Hilbert space. And then you use this one particle Hilbert space to construct your multi-particle Fock space and the associated vacuum. Okay, so to each choice of time-like killing vector, you can basically associate a quantization procedure, which will lead to a Fock space and a vacuum state and notion of particles, okay? So basically, the crucial observation, which is the starting point of what I'm going to talk about today, is the fact that if you consider fields that are conformal invariant, the range of choices, okay, for your time evolution killing vectors extends to conformal killing vectors. Okay, we will see this much more in detail in the next slides, in the coming slides. And this has somewhat has appeared in the literature here and there. For example, if you consider a massless field, you can use generators of dilations. You can use dilations as your generators of time evolution. And this leads to what Wald in his recent paper has called as Milne quantization massless field. Okay, so this is kind of analogous to the Rindler quantization in the Rindler wedge, but this is done basically in the future cone. We will see a little bit more details about this later on. Also, it is known that orbits of a conformal killing vector describe word lines of observers confined within a causal diamond in Minkowski spacetime, okay? And it has been argued that these observers, this was a long time ago by Carlo and Pierre Martinetti, that these observers should somewhat perceive the usual inertial vacuum Minkowski space as a thermal state at some diamond temperature. So basically, what I will try to do in this talk is to give a unified group theoretical description of this conjectured Milne and diamond temperatures, basically using a correspondence between radial conformal symmetry symmetries in Minkowski space-time and notions of time evolution in conformal quantum mechanics, okay, which is essentially a 0+1 dimensional conformal field theory. So let me start. Okay, yeah, and basically the material is taken from this paper of mine, which appeared last year, and the recent paper, which just came out, just I put on the archives last month. Okay, so let's start and have a look at what we mean by radial conformal symmetries of Minkowski space-time. So let us write down the Minkowski metric. Any questions? So let's write down. Yes.
Sorry, Michele, it's Carlo. The thing that I don't know the thing that Walt did. That's in Minkowski. It's just the field theory in the future cone of Minkowski. Is that what they do?
Yes. What is okay. Also known as the Milne universe. Yeah, but in 2D, restricting to okay. two dimensions, where essentially the wedge, the edge of the wedge of the Rinder wedge coincides yeah. with the edge of the cone. So the
In 2D. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Actually, I
have
a question.
Lee, yes.
Yes, is this the same frames of reference that Eugenio Bianchi used in his quantization of the black hole? And he had this kind of universal structure in the cases on the surface of the black hole.
I don't know about this quantization that Eugenio did. So I don't know. Cannot really answer the
questions. Great, thank you.
Okay, sorry. Right, so let us start from the Minkowski metric written in spherical coordinates, and then consider a general radial vector field, okay? So a vector field which does not have any angular components. And basically, if you impose that this is a conformal killing vector, so that the lead derivative on the metric just is proportional modulus some function to the metric itself, this implies that psi, that these functions here are actually independent of theta and phi, and it has this general form. So this is this derivation is given in this very nice paper by Herrero and Morales. So it is essentially a quadratic polynomial in T and R, in the time and radial coordinate. And A, B, and C here, A and B, are just real constants, okay? Generic real constants. So the first key observation, which was actually done already in this paper by Herrero Morales, is that this radial conformal killing vector can be written as essentially a linear combination of the generators of conformal transformations in one dimension. So in particular, you can see these guys here, K naught, D naught, and P zero, as generators of the subalgebra of the full conformal algebra in 3+1 dimensions. And these generators are special conformal transformations in the time direction, dilations, and time translations. Let us write them explicitly. So here we go. P0 is just a translation in this inertial time, and this is the generator of dilation in radial coordinates. And this is the generator of a special conformal transformations in the time direction. So these generators close the SL to R Lie algebra here. And you can actually, given the most general form here, this psi, you can actually classify this psi, this radial conformal killing vectors, according to the sign of this determinant here, okay? And when this determinant is negative, your killing vector generates elliptic transformations. So if you think about the correspondence between SL2R and the Lorentz algebra in two dimensions, right? essentially, these are in three dimensions, sorry. These are just correspond to the generators of rotations, okay? For example, you can write down this generator as this combination of P0 and K0. Notice here, very important, this alpha, this is a constant. You need this constant if you in order to combine these generators here, which have different dimensions, and to combine them into a dimensionless generator or time, as you wish. For delta equals zero, psi generates parabolic transformations. And if you still, if you again think about this correspondence with the Lorentz algebra, these are these correspond to generators of null rotations. And P0 and K0 are representatives of this class. And finally, when this determinant is positive, you have generators, your psi generates transformations, which are just hyperbolic transformations. And this corresponds to between the SL2R and the Lorentz algebra. And the generator of dilation and this generator, S0 here, this combination of P0 and K0, fall into this class. And these will be the main characters of this talk, okay? So let us look at the domains of causality of these radial conformal Killing vectors. I stole these pictures from the paper by Herrero Morales. They are very nice. Also some kind of, yeah, this kind of old fashioned style. So let us consider the case when A is equal to zero and B is different than zero. And this is essentially the generator of dilations falls into this class, okay? Because for the generator of dilations, remember this expression, okay? We have A equals zero, C equals zero, and B equals one. So in this case, this Killing vector is, and you see, it's for the dilation, let's focus for the dilation, for example, on the generator of dilations. Since in this case, C is equal to zero, you see this point just coincides with the origin. And this guy is time-like in the future and past cones, and is space-like elsewhere. Okay. Let us consider instead now the case of A different than zero and the positive determinant. So in this case, and S0, the generator I wrote in the previous slide, falls into this case. In this case, the structure is a little bit more articulated. And you see that this guy is time-like within this diamond. This is a causal diamond, okay? And the radius is given by this combination of the parameters. In this special case, should be the radius is alpha. Then it is space-like in these two regions here, and it is time-like in the causal complement of the diamond, okay? And it is, most importantly, it is null on the boundaries, okay? On these boundaries, on these light-like surfaces. Now, in the regions where these conformal Killing vectors are time-like, we can actually use them as generator of time evolution, as we said, right? For, you know, conformal invariant systems. And so the generator of dilations, indeed, can be seen as the generator of conformal time in a Milner universe. What is a Milner universe? It's nothing but, essentially, it's given by this metric. And you can convince yourself using this coordinate transformation from these coordinates t bar and chi to the that this metric can be mapped to a portion of Minkowski space, the future cone. Okay, notice the similarity of this coordinate transformation with the one relating Rindler coordinates and the Minkowski coordinates. They're very similar. The only thing is that now the role of space and time is exchanged. Usually in Rindler coordinates here, you know, as arguments of these hyperbolic functions, you have time, right? Now you have the spatial coordinate, okay? S0 instead, this conformal Killing vector is actually a vector which maps a causal diamond or radius alpha centered at the origin into itself. What I mean by that? I mean that if you consider in this diamond the orbits of this conformal Killing vector, these are just trajectories that are within the diamond that start at the past tip of the diamond and the future tip of the diamond, and then it becomes null trajectories on the boundary of the diamonds of the diamond. And basically, this S0 can be seen as a generator of time evolution, a proper time of diamond observers, okay, of uniformly accelerated observers that have a finite lifetime and are confined to the diamond. Okay. So now it comes the second crucial observation. If we consider this, the most generic radial conformal Killing vector that we wrote at the beginning, the xi, confined to word lines of r equal constant on or on the light cones, it takes this form, okay, where tau is some time variable. And this is nothing but the generator of conformal transformations on the real line. In particular, d tau generates translations in what I call inertial time, this time tau, which covers the entire real line. The generator of dilations, this tau d tau, can be seen as a generator of what I call Milne time, okay, which I denote with nu. And you see here, d0 is dimensionless. So if you really want to make it this into a generator of time translation, of time evolution, you need to rescale it by a constant, which I again call alpha, which has dimension of length. Okay. And it turns out that this Milne time is related to the inertial time by these relations. Okay. And you see that basically when tau ranges from minus infinity to plus infinity, you're just covering either the positive or the negative half line. Okay, half real line. Finally, we can combine, you know, the generators K0 and P0 in order to write down this generator here, S0. And you can see that if I define again, this is a dimensionless generator. And I can define a evolution in what I call diamond time sigma. And you can see that this diamond time is related to the inertial time through this relation. And that essentially this covers only the region bounded by alpha, okay? And this is what I call the diamond on the real line. You can also have the cotangent here, which covers the complement of the diamond on the real line. So there are some insects flying around here. Okay, so vector is precisely the most. See, Lee, you have a question?
Yes. Is your generator P0 plus S0 what used to be called DSR2?
Which one? This one?
Yeah, the one that leaves the length fixed because the conformal boost undoes the conformal transformation undoes the boost.
No, if I remember the one that you had in DSR had some of these factors in the denominator, right? So it's not, I mean, it's really like, a conformal transformation, which, I mean, it's essentially, you can think of this, okay, you have that in Minkowski space, this S, this conformal killing vector preserved, maps the diamond into itself. So if you restrict, if you restrict to the trajectory at the origin, this guy does the same, but now that does it on a straight real line. This is exactly what's happening here.
Good, okay.
So this killing vector, if you write it like this, corresponds to what is known in the literature as the most general generator of time evolution in conformal quantum mechanics. What is a conformal quantum mechanics? Well, the name says it is a conformal invariant quantum mechanical model. Essentially, it's 0+1 dimensional quantum field theory invariant under Sultuar, studied in depth in this old paper by some Italian guys. Essentially, the Lagrangian describing this system is this one. You can convince yourself that this is invariant under the action of, under SL2R. G here is, so it's essentially a standard quantum mechanical kinetic term plus this inverse squared potential, and G is a coupling constant, positive coupling constant. And you can realize the SL2R Lie algebra canonically in terms of P and Q operators. So position momentum operators in this way, but we are, will not really be interested in this realization of these generators here. Rather, what will we focus on will be the interpretation of this conformal quantum mechanics or the DAFF model as a one-dimensional conformal field theory, which was given in these papers by Jakib and collaborators about 10 years ago. So essentially what they did in these papers, they said, okay, let's look at cats labeled by this time that I called inertial time tau, okay? And the generator H, so what I call the generator, which is basically IP0, so it's the quantum mechanical version of the generator of inertial time translations, this guy acts as a derivative on these cats. Okay, so how do you characterize these cats in this conformal quantum mechanics? You basically start from reducible representations of SL2R Lie algebra, and these are basic textbook exercise. So you define the ladder operators L plus, L minus, and L zero in this way. This is the conventional definition of these ladder operators. They satisfy these commutators. And then the irreducible representations are defined by cats labeled by N. What is N? N is essentially a real number and is given by some R0, positive real number R0, which is associated to the eigenvalue of the Casimir of the algebra on these guys. And then N are integers. So Rn here, which labels this state. So these states are eigenstates of L0. Their eigenvalues are Rn. And Rn is nothing but this R0, which is associated to the eigenvalue of the Casimir, plus N, where N is just the integers, natural numbers, positive natural numbers. For the connoisseurs, well, we'll later on this focus on what is called the discrete series. This reducible representation of SL2R. And so this N, as I said, are eigenstates of L0, and this L plus, L minus raise and lower the eigenvalue N, okay? So basically, after some algebra, you can characterize these tau states by their overlap with these N states. Why do you want this? Well, you want this because then you calculate this inner product between tau states. And Jakib and these other people in the papers I mentioned below, above, basically interpret this inner product as the basic building block of the CFT1, a two-point function, okay? Where essentially this constant R0 plays the role of conformal dimension. Interestingly, but probably not too surprisingly, For R0 equal 1, this is nothing but the two-point function of a massless scalar field in Minkowski spacetime for an inertial observer sitting at the origin, or along the word line of an inertial observer sitting at the origin. Another interesting thing that I would like to point out is that something similar has been observed in the context of so-called word line quantum mechanics, some sort of holographic interpretation of the Sitter static patch in this paper, where they basically show that for conformally coupled scalar fields and for gravitons, the two-point function for the static patch observer, so the observer sitting at r equals zero in the static coordinates in this interspace, basically coincide with the two-point function of conformal quantum mechanics. This is quite interesting. So now we get to a very important point. So we said that this inner product is our two-point function, okay? It was shown in these papers that you can write this two-point function as follows. Basically, as a time evolution of some tau equals zero states, where these tau equals zero states can be obtained from the ground states of L0, which I introduced here, okay? So these are the n equals zero are the ground states of the, is the ground state of this L0 operator. And so these tau equals zero states can be obtained by acting with this exponential of minus L plus on these guys. This is very important. Okay, from now on, we set this conformal dimension to one, okay? Which is the case which corresponds to the, as I said, above, to the case of two-point function coinciding with the two-point function of a massless scalar field along the word line of inertial observer sitting at the origin. So this is very important because, why? Because if we borrow the result from quantum optics that L plus and Hermite, these ladder operators, can be realized in terms of two copies of creation and negation operators in this way, okay, then you see that this n equals zero ground state, let me call it vacuum state, can be shown to have a bipartite structure. So this guy L plus now is written in terms of two creation operators, A dagger left, A dagger right. And I can write this vacuum this way as a tensor product of the two vacuum state for the L oscillators and right oscillators. Okay, so basically this shows that this N equals zero state has a natural bipartite structure. Now, let us notice also that this algebra of ladder operators can be also realized with another combination of the generators of the SL2R, the algebra. And in this combination, essentially, L0 is given by S, your generator of diamond time translations. So let me now summarize what I've shown so far. So we can think now that in our conformal quantum mechanics, we have some kind of two vacuum-like states. Okay, they are not properly vacuum states because, you know, in quantum mechanics, you do not have a Fock space, but they can be thought as vacuum states as in the following way. So n equals zero, let me call it the Boulware vacuum. Why? Because this is the ground state of generator of diamond time evolution. Is in some way the analog of what would be the vacuum for Rindler observers. So the Z associated to boost generator. And let me call tau equals zero the auto-Hawking vacuum or the inertial vacuum from which we build this conformal invariant two-point function. Well, actually, this analogy is much deeper than it might appear here. In fact, as in the real world, and as I will show in the next slide, this Art Hawking vacuum is just, can be seen as a thermofield double state built on this bipartite Boulver vacuum. And this is very easily seen. So you start from our expression below that tau equals zero can be seen as x of minus L plus acting on n equals zero. So just write, expand the exponential. And with simple manipulations, you can write down this expression. And this is nothing but the following expression. So tau equals zero can be seen as the following state. And let me recall briefly what a thermofield double state is. So let me imagine I have eigenstates of some Hamiltonian in a given quantum system, okay? So I have some eigenstate n, which are not the n I wrote before, okay? This is just a generic quantum system. I have an Hamiltonian h and eigenstates of this Hamiltonian, and en are the eigenvalues of this Hamiltonian, okay? So this is just generic system. So you can build a thermofield double state by doubling these states, by doubling the system. And this is can be written in this way. Okay, so you have the sum over all the excitations of each copy of the system weighted by this this factor here, which contains the energies of the states. And this is some normalization factor. Why do people use this thermofield double state? Because you know you can actually describe thermal properties of the state. In fact, if you write down the density matrix associated with the thermofield double, and you trace over one copy of the system, then you obtain a thermal density matrix at a temperature of inverse beta. With respect to the Hamiltonian appearing here, I mean, the Hamiltonian was these eigenstates are associated. Sorry, it's kind of late here. I'm starting to feel the day. Okay, so basically, this tells us that this our inertial vacuum tau equals zero is nothing but a thermofield double state. Look. Exactly the same, besides a normalization factor. In fact, this state is not normalizable. And this is nothing but a thermofield double state at a temperature for the Hamiltonian, which generates diamond time evolution, at a temperature given by this expression. Okay, temperature, which is inversely proportional to the size of the diamond, which in our case here is the length of the segment on the real line. All right, so here another picture I stole for you. So here's the causal diamond in Minkowski space-time. These are the world lines of diamond observers. So these are essentially orbits of the Killing vector S, okay, which here in this paper was called by zeta. Okay, these are orbits of the Killing vector S. And essentially, we could think of this diamond temperature as the temperature associated to diamond observers sitting at the origin. Okay, so moving along this straight line, this is also an orbit of the Killing vector S. Okay. Are there any questions so far? Well, maybe many. So let me go ahead then. So, as I said before, the generators S and D, so this generator of conformal time evolution and of dilations, belong to the same class of generators of hyperbolic time evolution. So since they belong to the same class, we can find an SL2R transformation which maps one into another. Okay, conformal transformation on the real line, which maps one into the other. Well, it is very easy to find such a map. You define a new time variable tau prime, for which the Killing vector S of t takes the form of a generator of dilations. Okay. And is your transformation. And quite interestingly, this transformation coincides with the map written in Lightcone coordinates, which has been used to map the causal diamond to the Rindle wedge in Minkowski spacetime, which was then used to derive the modular Hamiltonian for the diamond in terms of the Rindle one, okay, this paper here. All right, so we can use this map. And through this map, we have this new identification of ladder operators, where now basically L0 is given by dilations. So you can repeat the same argument as before. And now we can see this Bulwer vacuum, N equals zero, as essentially this CFT1, the conformal quantum mechanic analog of the vacuum state associated to the generator of Milne time evolution, D. And so you can now interpret the thermal, the inertial vacuum tau equals zero as a thermofield double for this Hamiltonian, okay, generating Milne time translations at this Milne temperature. So a very similar temperature was obtained in this paper for the same class of Milne observers in the future cone, but using a model in terms of a detector moving along the trajectory of this Milne observers, in which basically alpha set the way this detector gap was rescaled at times evolved. So let me get back to the title of the talk. So why did I entitle this talk Getting Hot Without Accelerating? So it turns out that integral curves of a generic radial conformal Killing vectors are accelerated. So you take just a generic radial conformal Killing vector in Minkowski spacetime, and you can show, again, you can see in this paper by Herrera and Morales, that these trajectories in general have non-vanishing models of four acceleration, which is given by this expression here. Okay, so this is the modulus of the four acceleration. This is the A appearing here in the Killing vector. It's one of the parameters appearing here. And where delta is your determinant, B squared minus 4AC, and omega is this quantity here. Now, it turns out that for integral curves of the generator of dilations, we have that A, for psi equal d zero, or d, if I multiply it by I, you see that A equals zero equals C equals zero. And so these guys, these word lines, have vanishing acceleration. Likewise, if I consider integral curves of the generator of diamond time evolution, in this case, we have B equals zero, A is equal minus one over two alpha, chi is equal to alpha over two, and at r equals zero, we have that this omega goes to infinity, and does also for these observers, just for the diamond observers sitting at the origin, the acceleration vanishes. For the other one, the other trajectory is the one that are curved within the diamond, we have a non-vanishing accelerator. So you can get hot, it seems, through this correspondence, if you believe this correspondence between radial conformal symmetries in Minkowski spacetime and conformal quantum mechanics. And if you enjoy conformal symmetry, it seems that you can get out without accelerating. So let me get to the final slide. So basically the main serious point of this talk, I hope serious enough, was to try to show that one-dimensional conformal field theory of conformal quantum mechanics has a rich enough structure which reproduces vacuum thermal effects that you find in full-fledged quantum field theories in D plus one dimensions. And that these, the main reason, I mean, the basic fact that lies beyond this vacuum thermal effect is that essentially you have a freedom in choosing time evolution. And this determines you know, your different choice of vacuum states and this, and this thermal phenomena. Also, evidence for this, the existence of this diamond temperature and Milne temperatures in real Minkowski spacetime has appeared in the literature, in bits and pieces, and mostly for two-dimensional models. And so the hope was in the stop that using this correspondence between radial conformal flows in Minkowski spacetime and time evolution conformal quantum mechanics, you could provide some sort of group theoretic evidence for the existence of these two temperatures and to show how they're actually connected. And to take home the message that in conformal invariant system, the inertial vacuum in Minkowski spacetime is essentially can be seen is a thermal state for observers whose time evolution is not eternal. So you do not need an actual acceleration, but just a finite lifetime, or maybe not eternal, because you know Milne evolution is actually infinite, but not eternal. So these results also hint at some kind of deep connection between the Milne patch of Minkowski spacetime, to actually show that there's a conformal map. Between the Milne patch of Minkowski spacetime and coastal diamonds, and maybe you know these tools I handled during this talk could be perhaps of some use for studying entanglement in Minkowski spacetime. Who knows? So I finish here, and thank you very much for connecting.
Thanks, Michele, for this nice talk. So, are there questions from students first? Okay, at the moment, no questions from students. Are there questions from anyone else?
So, let me break the ice. If there's nobody else. This seems to stay together very well in a sense, right? It's a, they're all, can you hear me?
So I can hear
yes,
you.
Yes, I can.
Ah, okay, because I see you frozen. And okay, now you're back. I guess I have two questions. One is that when I did this thing with Pierre, it was very nice. It was very convincing. It was very beautiful. But it seemed a very, very, very to us very accidental. So, what in our discussion, the question was: is that an example of something general, or is just we're just you know fishing a very special? I guess the question is how do you view now that result? So it seems you're saying it can be viewed as an example of something more general. And the other question is is all this pointing out in a sense that how would I say? The direction of all this that the distinction between thermal state and ground states and states, it's could be seen as largely perspectival, or is that too much, pushing too much the direction where you're going? These are vague questions.
Yeah, okay, so let me answer the first question. So if I remember correctly, in that paper with Pierre, you use this thermal time hypothesis, but more importantly, you actually use this conformal map from the regular yeah. wedge to the diamond to actually yeah. derive the diamond temperature. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why we thought it was peculiar.
In that spirit, there's something I started appreciating only like, you know, the last couple of weeks is that. This generator that I'm using here, the one that generates evolution along the the axis of the diamond to the generator of static patch time evolution in the sitter space. So in that sense, you would have a conformal map, and where basically the alpha in this conformal map, the alpha that you have on the let's say Minkowski side becomes the cosmological constant in the sitter space. And it's related to the cosmological constant in the sitter space. And this would become the temperature that static patch observers perceive in the Bunch-Davis vacuum in the sitter space time. So there is a conformal bridge between these two pictures.
I see. Okay.
In some way, this is in the same spirit of what you did with Pierre in that earlier paper on diamond temperature. Concerning the others, I didn't quite understand fully your second question. So
because it was very confused. I mean, the question is physically, what does it mean? Is that this temperature is an effect of special cases, or is the other way around? Is a lack of temperature, which is a non-thermality, which is special,
or I think
some special symmetry to produce this thermal thing?
Yeah, well, probably what this. Okay, let me say, if you just focus on the one-dimensional conformal quantum mechanics system, okay, this result seems to show that the temperature arises anytime you have a time evolution which does not allow to cover the entire domain of the theory. Okay,
yeah, so either you restrict our key idea, yeah.
Yeah, so either, and if this is shown, you know, in very solid group theoretical, using group theoretical tools. So if you restrict to half line or a segment of the line, then, you know, that time evolution will see the so-called inertial vacuum as a thermal state. And and you see, so probably this is the...
that's most general. That's a general physical way of viewing this.
There to say the.
Thank you.
And you know, and the interesting thing is that this applies also in such a very very simple system, which is Ersatz. Yeah.
Next, there is a question by Lee.
Yes, it follows on from Carlo's question. The way you just stated it sounds a little bit too simple, because the non-inertial state may have many parameters, or it may just have a constant acceleration. And in the latter case, is analogous to the cases we expect are thermal. But it sounded like you were saying that anything that doesn't have the right splitting into the vacuum states is exactly thermal. And I don't think you're saying that. It's more complicated. And then I have a follow-up.
Yes, please.
Well, the follow-up is, have you ruined any chances for a simple statement of a quantum equivalence principle?
No, I don't think so. Also, because, you know, like this is just, I think it's probably the only solid part of this work is the one that concerns purely this one-dimensional conformal quantum mechanics. And so this is really like, it's a simple model. You might look at this as a toy model, and, you know, I don't think there's room for making any statements about the quantum equivalence principle in this context.
Well, can I push you in one regard? The real world isn't that much more complicated. If you think that the real world lives on the celestial sphere, as some people do,
or that's right. Yeah,
that it transforms under SU2, and that's only one dimension above the system you're studying. And so, can you use your group theoretic methods to make progress on filling in with the details of the quantum theory on the celestial sphere?
That would be great, actually.
Yeah, it would be great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Laurent?
Hello, Michele.
Hi, Laurent.
I have a question somewhat more technical, maybe conceptual, too. It's the I want to understand a bit more this relationship between the UNRU VACRA, where you clearly have a left-right, you know, entangling states, which is thermal, and the MIL universe. So this one, you also write it as a entangling states?
Okay. There is this, I don't have any slide, but I have the reference to the Waltz paper, and there's also some other papers about this. So essentially, this is what happens is, okay, so here, in 2D Minkowski space, you have that essentially the cone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Hello? Okay. Right, you have that essentially the boundaries of the Rinder wedge and of the Milne cone coincide, just because the cone is just a wedge itself in 2D. So you can continue the Rinder modes into the Milne ones. That's what the world, I think, shows in this paper. I don't remember now, I read it a while ago. This connection is spoiled in dimensions bigger than two, because then you still have a wedge, the Rinder wedge, okay? Where it was boundary is an old plane, but the boundary of Milne universe is a light cone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, mm-hmm. So you can make this connection precise between the Rindler modes and Milne modes only in 2D.
What happens to, let's say you do it in 2D, what happens to the VACRA then? So in, you know, there you have an entangling left right, the Milne universe, the solution of left right. So what
right,
is the,
so,
and
yeah,
it's not a vacuum anymore. So what does
become? Yeah, you have this in this paper here. Actually, you have some kind of these people argued here.
Sue and Ralph.
Sue and Ralph. Basically, they wrote this paper about this future past entanglement, which was a bit controversial. But so it shows that basically you have entanglement between the future and past cone. Okay, so the expanding Milne universe and the contracting Milne universe. Yeah. If I can find the paper, I've cited it somewhere here. So yeah, they show that there's entanglement. So in the same way you have entanglement between left and right Rinder wedges, you have entanglement between past and future or expanding and contracting Milne universes.
What does that mean, entanglement between past and future?
Well, they argue that in this paper here. Well, it's basically the analog of space-like entanglement in for a time-like interval.
But how could you measure it?
These guys in this paper talk about the way you could actually measure this by switching detector and then turning it off after some time, something like that. They claim that this effect could be in this paper here. So yeah, I put the full reference if you want to have a look at it.
Okay.
So they propose that you have indeed for massless field, this the possibility of this entanglement between future and past cones.
Mm-hmm. More questions? So I also have curiosity. So you mentioned in your conclusions that this conformal quantum mechanics could be used as an instrument, as a tool to study entanglement in Minkowski space-time. So can you say something more about that? And in particular, do you think that is there a way to generalize it and to study entanglement in the system?
That would be wonderful. Still, I mean, there's a big question here. I should have made it bigger, actually, the question mark here. You know, this is just a very wild speculation. I mean, first of all, you should try to make a connection between entanglement in this quantum mechanical models and entanglement in Minkowski space-time for what concern causal diamonds and Milne cones within the universe. And then maybe you could start looking at generalizations to the Sitter space. So this is something just I threw there, like without really even having ever looked at in which way you could possibly generalize this. I mean, there are still so many questions I would like to answer about this derivation I talked about today, especially this connection that I mentioned to Carlo with the static patch in the Sitter space to the static patch observers. Also, okay, something I put here in the appendix, something very interesting is that I just noticed also a few weeks ago, reading the literature, that this structure of vacua that I described for conformal quantum mechanics appears already, a very similar vacuum structure appears for ADS2 black holes, okay, in this paper by Strominger and Spradlin, more than 20 years ago. The fact that a very similar vacuum structure appears in this context is not very surprising because, you know, isometries of ADS2 are just SL2R. Okay, so we basically end up meeting the same generators of time evolution for these ADS2 black holes. So the generators of the possible generators of time evolution for the ADS2 black holes are essentially in correspondence with the generators of evolution in conformal quantum mechanics. So yeah, so there are very, you know, different avenues in which you could expand this simple observation I gave in this talk.
Okay. More questions or comments? Okay, so if not, let's thank Michele for his nice talk and the discussion.
Thank you very much for having me.